She lifted an open hand above her head and held the book before her with the other. Blaze shook his head and smiled crookedly. I thought we'd make some money, maybe. Overthrow a baron and marry his daughters, if we got really ambitious. I'm glad I met you, Dante said. Yeah. The nether surged and tossed. A subverbal hum quivered on the air. Samaran shouted what Dante recognized as the last passage of the prophecy of the three-tailed beast, the one he'd quoted in part to Larimore when he was trying to keep from being tortured and killed down in the dungeon. "Let the prison of the heavens be unmade," Samaran said. She closed the book and faced the door. Dante drifted toward her up the hill. Blaze crunched through the snow at his side. Samaran waited, oblivious, arms dangling at her sides, transfixed by the black portal. One of the burning bones flamed out in a wiggle of grey smoke. The sense of a presence grew excruciating, maddening Dante's mind like all the things he'd ever been unable to recall, like the panicked eyes of a birthing mother whose child won't come, as tonic as the fires of the earth forging the scaled body of a dragon. Samarand glanced over her shoulder at the priests, eyes wild, and Dante slowed his pace. "Something's wrong," she said. "There was no error," Jackson said quickly. "I don't understand," a balding priest said. "I can feel him waiting," said another. "There is a flaw," Samaran said. Her voice was creased with an animal dread. Another bone burnt out. Then a third. The halo around Barden was growing indistinct, muffled by the falling snow. Tears of exhaustion and frustration slid down Samaran's cheeks. "We don't have the time or strength for a second attempt any time soon," a dark-haired, middle-aged priest said, face blank with fear. "No," Samaran said. "What are you saying?" the balding priest said. "What does this mean?" "Nothing," Samaran said. She gazed into the void of the doorway. "We failed." "Then we are lost," the middle-aged priest said. "We're the only ones who know that right now." Samaran drew a ragged breath. Some of her old sternness returned to her eyes. "It makes no difference. We'll tell the people we have restored Aron to his seat at the heaven's twin rivers, and they must do the same for him on this earth. Perhaps their faith will succeed where we have faltered. Perhaps we will find the true cycle. And on that day we will try again." "Wait," Dante blurted, reaching into his pack. He drew out the first copy of the Cycle of Aron to ever be written, and held it over his head. The white tree on its cover mirrored the bone oak that dwarfed them there on the plains of snow. "I have the true book."
"You could have warned me this was your plan," Blaze hissed in his ear.
The eyes of Samaran and all six priests snapped to Dante's face and the book in his hand. All of the strings of his body hummed like a living chord. He gestured to the vault of stars shining through the doorway, as if that would explain to Blaze what he felt lurking within the constellations. What if he held the key that would turn the final tumbler? Aron, the god who'd made order of the mixed waters of the heavens. He who'd set the order of time from his seat in the light of the furthest roaming planet star. In Aron's presence, would Wetton hold the trials that had condemned Blaze to die? Would he allow the meaningless slaughter of the rebels outside Narashtovic? What other power could make the laws of nature sing in tune with what Dante felt in his bones? If he had the ability to bring that god to life, how could he prevent such justice for the world? Destiny, perhaps, had guided Dante to steal the book, and through its subtle machinations, inevitable as the revolution of the belt, had put him here to complete what the council had begun. Samarand could complete the rites, but none could deny she'd done so only by Dante's mercy. If he cut her throat in that final moment, in the weakness of her effort, he could seize the reins of the Order, ensure peace for the Southlands as Aron made for the Earth what he'd set right in the skies. This was the moment he'd been born for. This was the moment that would test his will to its limit. "Give me the book," Samarand said. She stepped forward and extended her hand. Dante held out the impossible weight of the cycle of Aron.
"You mewling worm!" Jackson thundered.
He leapt forward and slapped the book from Dante's hand. It sunk into the snow.
"What is this?" Samarand said, whirling to face him. "Old debts repaid," Jackson said. "I told you I'd come back for it, Summer."
Samarand's eyes widened, then narrowed to fearful slits.
"You...
me," Jackson said, in a nasally clipped voice that wasn't his own. He laughed unevenly, then swept a hand down his middle-aged face and body, and became a skinny old man with a fiercely curled beard and sharp blue eyes that burned with their own ageless fire.
"When did you replace him?"
"How?" Samarand said. Dante felt her clutching at the nether.
"I know things you couldn't dream, you usurperous hag," Kali said. "You've let your dream of conquest blind you, your monstrous braying ego. Let me remind you of the look of righteous power."
He thrust out with the shadows. Samarand jerked up her hands, and the two forces met with an inhuman scream. Blackness burst over her, and she was knocked to the ground. Shouts hied up from behind them. Dreamlike, Dante turned to see Larimore and his soldiers racing up the snow. The oldest of the priests flung his arm at Kali, and Blaze cleaved it off at the elbow.
"Who do we kill?" he yelled at Dante.
"Everyone!"
Dante said, mind splintered. The cogs had turned again and yanked him from his solid ground. He didn't know whether to help Kali or kill him. The old man had sent the assassin to the chapel, he knew at once, having seen Dante at Larimore's command, and assuming he'd turned to their side, ignorant that Dante held fast to his first purpose. But the moment was too desperate for fine distinctions. For the moment, Kali was on the side trying to kill Samarand. That was all that mattered. If it came down to it, Dante would deal with him once all the men who were about to try to kill them were dead themselves. Samarand was scrabbling to her feet, away from Kali. She curled her fingers, and a ghostly blade spun for his face. He cursed and whacked it aside with a hastily formed shadow sword of his own, then swung his bony arm and slung the weapon at her body. She twisted, and it clipped her right arm, blood pattering into the snow. Around them, Dante felt the priests beginning to open their own overused channels to the nether that saturated the grounds. Blaze crouched like a cat, then slashed his sword across the gut of the middle-aged, dark-haired priest when the man made his move at Kali, dropping him without a word. A tall, stout priest clenched his fist, and blue fire rushed at Blaze. He yelped and threw himself into the snow. Dante flicked his wrist and sent all the snow between he and Blaze to bury the boy in cold white and smother the remaining flames. He whipped out his sword and met the tall priest's next assault with a wave of pure energy. The man had been weakened in the hours he'd spent in the ritual, and when Dante tapped into the primal river flowing around Barden's roots, it roared past him and charred the tall priest on the spot.
"Is it really you, Kali?"
the balding priest called out as Blaze dug himself out of the snow and hunted for a victim.
"It's really me, Baxter," Kali said, then grunted as Samarand lunged forward and punched him in the ribs.
The priest called Baxter chuckled wildly and turned on the last remaining man of his order, a fat man of some 60 years with a grey beard in place of his chin. If the fat man died, none but Samarant would be left to oppose them, and for a careering moment Dante thought they might actually win. Then Larimore and his soldiers closed the distance between them, and Dante remembered the small army across the valley and why he had resolved to die.
"Aron's come loose and is killing everyone!" Blaze screamed, dropping into his defensive posture, fists holding his sword tight at his waist.
He cut at the calf of the lone soldier who'd broken ranks to face him.
"Head for the hills!"
"What's going on here?"
Larimore shouted, sword in hand. Before his eyes, Baxter grappled Nether with the fat priest.
"Kill them, Larimore!"
Saramand commanded, dipping her hand in the wound on her shoulder and tossing burning drops of blood at Callie.
"Baxter and the children, they're traitors!"
Larimore's long face went blank. He stuck his sword through Baxter's back, and blood jetted where its point emerged from his chest. The fat priest fell back, wiping blood from his eyes. Dante ran him through before he could recover. And like that, half the Council of Aron would be dead once Samarand and Callie's fight was concluded. Blaze finished carving up his soldier, and then he and Dante stood to face Larimore and his men.
"Dante, what are you doing?"
"She's going to burn our home," he said, sword arm quaking.
"I have to stop her."
Larimore shook his head, squeezed his eyes shut.
"I'm sorry," he said.
Then hurried uphill to the duel between Samarand and Callie, a couple armed men crunching along behind him. The remaining 10-odd soldiers and armed servants turned on the boys, swords out. One took a quick swipe at Dante, and he jumped back, meaning to give the man's blade a mere nick of his left arm, but his timing was off, and he felt the steel bite deep, bringing with it far more blood than he needed for his next summons.
"Get down!"
Dante shouted, planting his hand on Blaze's neck and stuffing his face toward the ground. Blaze fell into the snow with a sigh, and Dante punched out with all the force he could draw from the white tree. Blood spurted from Dante's ears and nose as the shockwave hammered outward from his body. Already he'd pushed it too far, drank too greedily of the bottomless energy drawn by the tree, but he had no intention to hold back at any stage of this fight. The men were blasted, head over heels. He heard bones snapping, then the muffled thuds of their bodies bouncing in the snow. He lunged forward and hacked at the man who'd laid open his left arm. Blaze staggered to his feet, half stunned. Six armsmen struggled and swayed upright. One had lost his sword and scuffled to find it in the churned-up snow. From over their heads, Bardon groaned with an ear-splitting shriek, and as the first man closed on the boys, a 2-foot rib fell free from the white tree's branches and pinned him to the earth. By instinct, Dante grabbed the rib's rounded end, and his left arm went numb to the shoulder. He tugged it loose and snarled at the survivors. Shockingly, they fell back. "Any other tricks?" Blaze breathed, glancing between the 5 opponents that still faced them, and the crackle of Nether from further uphill, where Callie fended off 4 of his own.
"A few," Dante said,
and his eyesight blurred, and the world went mute as he poured the shadows into the veins of the recently slain. 3 of the ruined bodies retook their feet, broken limbs dangling, blood still oozing from their wounds. Within a second, the dead's oafish blows had struck down one of the living comrades. A soldier swung at Dante as he brought up the rib to block it. The man's sword shattered like an icicle, raining shards of steel into the snow. Dante stuck him in the gut with his sword. He swung the rib, and it passed cleanly through the man's trunk. The walking dead overwhelmed another, while Blaze charged one of the remaining armsmen, who could do nothing more than fend off his wild blows. Blaze drove him back, and the man tripped on a corpse, arms flying out to break his fall, leaving his body exposed. Blaze stabbed him in the neck and whooped. A calmness had taken Dante, a stage beyond confidence. The shaking nausea that had hit him when he'd revived the dead flesh of the soldiers washed from him like it had never been there. He walked through the falling snow towards the last man standing.
"Please,"
the man said, his face a rictus of terror. He let his blade hang loose from his grasp. Then the dead took him and pounded him into the earth.
"To Kali," Dante said, sprinting up the hill. Kali had retreated steadily, outnumbered. One of the two men Larimore had taken with him lay in a reddish heap on the snow, but blood flowed freely from Kali's left hand, now missing a couple fingers, and from a gash on his thin chest. Nether sputtered from his fingers, and Saruman wrestled up the strength to turn it aside. They were both near the end of their limits. Soon they'd simply be an old man and a middle-aged woman, no more potent than a beggar and a fishwife.
Dante put himself between Kali and the others and brandished the fallen rib of Bardon. Everyone stopped in their tracks.
"You don't have to die," Dante told Larimore, meeting the man's eyes. "Don't you ever get tired of being so cocky?"
"What's this about?"
Samaran said, blinking at the blood trickling from her split eyebrow.
"Has Kali promised you a seat on his council? One you couldn't wait for under my rule?"
"He's promised me nothing," Dante spat. "He's told me nothing but lies since the day I met him."
"I told you what you needed to hear to stop a war,"
Kali said from behind him.
"And then you tried to kill me. I thought you'd thrown in your lot with these vermin. Look at it from my perspective. You'd have tried to kill you, too."
"You've cut enough holes in my order to make killing me moot,"
Samaran said.
"We can't risk war with so few priests to lead it."
"Shut up,"
Dante shouted, chest heaving.
"What have you gotten yourself into?"
Larimore said softly. The man tightened his grip on his sword.
"More than these lordly figures ever intended," Dante said.
"I gave you every opportunity under the sun,"
Samaran said.
"I let you study in the Citadel. I let you replace Will Palamore as Larimore's right hand. I even brought you here."
"I taught you enough to save your friend," Kali said. "You let me send you here through your own ambition."
"Oh, yes. Everyone's innocent,"
Dante cried out, unable to tell if his face was wet from snow, tears, or laughter.
"You'd use me as a tool in your harmless plot to kill thousands in my homeland," he said, waving the rib at Samaran, "while you'd angelically send two boys to kill the political rival who cast you down."
He finished, poking his sword at Kali.
Kali raised his brambly brows and laughed.
Larimore gave him an odd look.
"You have to admit it was a keen enough plan," the old man said. "What are you going to do about it, then? Kill us all?"
"Don't tempt us," Blaze said.
"We couldn't go to war now if we wanted to,"
Samaran said. She flipped her battle-frayed black braid over her shoulder, gestured at the corpses of the priests melting the snow with body heat and blood, pointed at the hulking mass of the white tree.
"You have the book. You know how close we came today. We can try again."
"Heaven must be a place where other people shut up," Dante said.
"You know it can be done,"
she said, locking eyes with him.
"With your help and a few years."
Dante sighed through his nose. He felt cold and bleak as November rain. They could come back and try again, but they didn't need Samaran's hard ambition for that. It seemed laughably cruel that Kali's clear-eyed lies would be preferable to anything, but if one object of value remained in the ruin of Dante's beliefs, it was the knowledge that killing her would guarantee Malon's safety. With Samaran's death, they could start over. Perhaps whoever took her seat as Lord of the Dead City would come closer to the pattern of the heavens than she.
"Stand aside, Larimore,"
the boy said in an unsteady voice.
"It's time."
Larrimore shook his head at the ground. He smiled then, a wan thing that marred his eyes with the first sadness Dante'd ever seen on his face. "You know I can't do that," Summerance Hand said. "I'd have died 100 times without her. Whatever conflict I may feel can't erase that past." Dante nodded. His throat was dry. "I liked you better than any of them." "Considering you want them all dead, I think you damn me with faint praise," Larrimore said, finding himself again. Dante's spirit faltered. How could he kill the one man he'd met other than Robert, who understood his place in the world so well? And not just understood it, but seized it, knew by instinct which things he could control, and which he could only defy by mocking them. Of all Dante's crimes, he knew killing Larrimore would wear on him the hardest. In time he might forget the rest, but Larrimore's burden would weigh on him till the end of his days.
"I'll do it."
Blaze stepped forward, hand on hilt, sensing Dante's hesitation. "You deal with her." "He's my burden," Dante said, seeing the face of a farmer through a sheet of flames. "I'll be the one to send him to the banks of the two rivers." He called over his shoulder to Callie. "Samaran's yours. I never wanted her in the first place."
"Oh, good," Callie said weakly. "If you get a moment, you might think about what we're going to say to them," Blaze said, jerking his chin toward the scores of men who'd left the encampment a mile down valley and were dashing through the snow towards the battle under the tree.
Dante laughed tonelessly and lifted his weapons. Larrimore brought up the point of his blade. He winked.
"I'll save you a room in that place behind the stars, you little bastard."
He made a quick swipe for Dante's throat, and Dante turned it with the flat of the rib. Larrimore's sword rang, but stayed intact. To his right he heard Callie advance on Samarand, and then the whisper of Netha, cold and discharged. Blaze headed for the last remaining soldier, and, wisely, the man turned tail and ran downhill.
"I should have stomped your wrinkled ass 20 years ago," Samarand said.
"Then good for me, you're such an idiot," Callie laughed.
Larrimore struck again, and if the two said anything else, Dante didn't hear it. He parried and stabbed for Larrimore's stomach, and Larrimore twisted his wrist to turn Dante's blade. He swung the rib for the meat of Larrimore's torso. The man sucked in his gut, and swung back his hips, and the rib tore through his cloak and cut a shallow crease across his stomach. Larrimore smiled harder and pressed the attack, blade flashing. With both his weapons, Dante barely held him back. Blaze grunted and tensed, but Dante waved him back. He lashed out with the rib, and Larrimore spun away and slashed across Dante's extended arm. He bled freely from both wounds to his left arm, grip unsteady on the bone's natural handle. He held himself, nearing the end of his endurance. Samaran screamed from off to their right, a bright note against the clash of weapons and the frazzled pop of spent nether. Larrimore's smile broke. He glanced her way, and in that brief moment, Dante clamped the man's sword between blade and rib and wrenched it from his grasp. It spun away and disappeared into the snow. Dante placed the point of his sword over Larrimore's heart, willing himself to steady the quiver in his arm.
"Don't make me do this," he whispered.
Larrimore leaned into the blade. Dante's wrist twitched as he felt the skin parting. Then he cried out and drove his arm forward, eyes closed to the steel burying itself in the man's chest. He felt his sword tug from his hand as Larrimore slumped to his knees.
"One last thing, boy," the man whispered.
Dante's eyes shot open, and he knelt across from Larrimore's strained face.
"What is it?"
"My gravestone,"
Larrimore gasped.
make sure it describes me as I was.
Anything.
He died plucking the queen from the jaws of a dragon,
Larimore said.
He smiled at the boy and slumped into the snow, breath rattling past his lips. Dante sat down beside the body and gently freed his sword. He wiped it clean on the white snow and put his hand on Larimore's still shoulder. For all the years he lived, Dante could recall that moment as if living it for the first time. Larimore's prone form, warm but vacant, his empty hand stretched out in the snow, oblivious to the freezing cold, droplets of water melting on his fingers, his open-eyed face showing no pain or agony, just an enigmatic twist to his lips, a budding surprise in his eyes, as if he'd looked on the order that underpinned the turning of time. Dante's eyes stung. An emotion as heavy as the hand of gravity pushed him against the earth. That Larimore, a man of wit and action, and utter disregard for the fearful opinions of the lesser men around him, that he had died in defense of a woman like Samarand. Dante wiped his eyes, so consumed by injustice he felt nothing but absurdity. He stood, sniffling, to see Cali thrashing around in the snow, strangling away Samarand's final seconds. Dante sheathed his sword, slid the rib down the right side of his belt. He drew a shuddering breath.
"You're keeping that," Blaze said, scrunching up his face. "Why?"
He shrugged. "I'll have a sword made from it."
"That's sick."
"What isn't?" Dante said, then felt dumb, however true it may be.
Cali leaned back on his knees, chest heaving, scraggly white hair plastered to his brow. He scowled down at Samarand's red, bug-eyed face and slapped her across her dead cheek.
"Look what you made me do," Cali said.
He clambered to his feet and kicked snow over her body.
"If you'd known your place, you could have been indispensable to me. Idiot pride."
He kicked more snow, stumbled forward. "I don't think she can hear you," Blaze said.
"If there's any justice in the world, a passing spirit will give her my message."
The old man's green eyes gleamed in the glare of the snow. His gaze shifted to Dante, and some of the wildness faded from his wrinkled face.
"He's dead, isn't he?"
Dante didn't reply.
"Larimore was a good man, from what I saw of him."
"You don't know anything about it," Dante said.
"No, I don't."
"Then don't speak as if you do."
"Right,"
Cali said. His eyes drifted downhill, and he frowned at the walking dead standing rock still a short ways down where Dante'd left them.
"You're dealing with dangerous forces."
Dante shrugged, severed the bonds that kept them upright. They dropped like cut puppets.
"I'm not the only one," he said. "I'm starting to see that."
Cali ran his fingers through his beard.
"So, going to add me to the pile of bodies fertilizing this tree?"
Dante snorted, wanting nothing more. It wasn't Cali's assassin that tempted him to strike down the old man. That he could forgive. It was everything else that he couldn't. Betrayal and lies. The false friendship he'd let Dante believe, so long as it would benefit him. The empty ache he felt to the marrow of his bones.
Dante shook his head, sickness curdling his heart.
"I need you to tell that army down there they serve you now. They'd never follow me."
"Wise beyond your years."
The old man considered the few dozen men running up the hill toward them, no more than a minute away.
"It's good work,
though some of them probably weren't even born the last time I ruled the Order.
Deal with it. Callie chuckled to himself, brightening by degrees. He smoothed his hair away from his brow and looked shocked to see he was missing most of the bottom two fingers of his left hand.
That's unfortunate, he said, watching blood pulse from the stumps with the beating of his heart.
He shook his hand, like two new fingers might pop out, then sighed wearily.
Shit.
He spent the next minute before the troop arrived, binding the wounds with a strip of his black doublet. The 60-odd men who'd come slowed as they approached the otherworldly spread of the white tree and to the fresh carnage beneath its boughs. Rettinger separated himself from the pack and looked between the old man and the two boys, eyes thick with confusion.
Tell me why I'm not about to cut you three down as traitors, he said, voice trembling with an indecipherable mix of emotion.
Because that would make you a traitor too, Callie said, and then some bright young man would have to kill you. Where does it end?
He smiled vaguely at the waiting men. Dante felt him gather a trickle of shadow and lend it to his words, so they'd boom down the slope of the valley.
I am Callimandicus. Years ago I led this order until Samaran stole it from me. I've just now reclaimed it.
He killed her! He admits it!
Someone shouted from the crowd. There was a general shift of cold steel.
Dante clenched his jaw and readied the nether, wondering if he killed a few of them suddenly and brutally enough, whether the rest would flee. He doubted that. Somehow his fate, again, rested in Callie's two clever hands.
Do you serve an all-too-mortal woman, or do you serve Aran?
Callie barked, sweeping his eyes over the ranks. A few swords faltered.
We serve the pleasure of the sealed citadel, Rettinger said slowly. All I see is a few outsiders with the blood of good men on their hands.
He is who he says. A middle-aged man with a scar-creased face stepped forth from the line of soldiers, nodding at Callie.
Hello, Vlempk, Callie waved.
A couple other time-weathered soldiers spoke Callie's full name. Rettinger sucked his teeth and rested his hand on his sword. Snow fell on their faces. Callie lifted his unwounded hand.
I know it hits your hearts as false, but don't act in haste. The rest of the council will know my claim. Let them accept or reject it as they will.
Rettinger's expression flickered as he gazed on the wreckage of the woman and men he'd so recently followed. He shook his head. But he was a born lieutenant, Dante knew, had seen it in the course of the battle with the rebels.
That's the only smart course, Rettinger said. I won't risk adding to this tragedy, no matter how hard I might wish to.
He turned around to face his men.
Gather up the bodies. It's time to go home.
Dante let the nether bleed away from his grasp. Blaze bent over Larimore's body and plucked at his cloak. Dante dropped his jaw to see his friend looting the body of the only other man he trusted in the entire kingdom. But before he could upbraid Blaze or punch him in the face, the boy stood and held out Larimore's badge. It was nearly the same as Dante's own. The outline of the tree, surrounded by a silver ring, but at the center of the tree, two blue sapphires glittered in the overcast light.
I think he'd want you to have it, Blaze said.
Dante nodded, unable to speak. The twin sapphires winked up at him from his palm. He turned away and wiped his eyes and shuffled around the snow until he found the Cycle of Aran, the book that had been used to cause so much hurt. He brushed away the snow, held it to his chest. The soldiers piled the bodies on the wagon,
wrapping loose limbs in the cloth of the slain. Hundreds had died on the journey to Baden, and all that had changed was the position of power from an old woman to an older man. 100 miles lay between them and the dead city. Dante closed his eyes and took the first step. Chapter 18. Callie led the soldiers through the empty miles of the road, encountering no one till they reached the fringes of the dead city. He took them over the river and through the outer sprawl, past the silent guards atop the Pride Gate and Inn Gate, and finally to the gates of the citadel itself. Without attacks, with significantly fewer men to slow them down, it took them under 4 full days. The guards of the citadel saw the colors of the order and the faces of their fellow armsmen, and swung open the doors to let them through. "What are you going to tell them?" Dante said to Callie, as they approached the keep. The remaining members of the council stood on the keep's front steps, awaiting them in the dull afternoon sunlight. Over the last few days, Dante's anger toward Callie had sunk from the base of his skull to the pit of his stomach, leaving his mood sour but his mind clear. He'd resolved to use the old bastard. The council would never allow Dante as its leader, but with Callie seated at its head, he'd have a straight line to its decisions. Perhaps a seat for himself. Whichever, he'd no longer be a pawn to any other man. "I'll tell them the truth," Callie said. He scowled at Dante. "It's not funny." Callie had sent no riders ahead of their march, and they'd made no stops once they'd hit the city. The members of the council spilled down the keep stairs as they saw how few had come back from Baden. Their faces switched from anxious expectation to wavering shock.
"Callimandicus,"
Tarkin said as they drew up. The priest's face wrinkled double as he squinted through the gleaming snow in the yard to look on Callie's face. Callie waved at him.
"Where's Samarand?"
Ollivander demanded.
"Dead," Callie said.
"Dead?" Callie nodded.
"Very unfortunate."
"And the others?"
"Check that corpse wagon back there,"
Blaze said, jerking his thumb behind him. Ollivander struggled for control of his face.
"What about Aron? Did they release him?"
The 4 other priests drew themselves as straight as their old backs would allow. Callie combed his beard with his hand.
"That," he said,
doling out the words syllable by syllable,
"is the reason she's dead."
Ollivander gaped.
"Aron slew her."
"No, you half-wit. Aron didn't slay Samarand,"
Callie said, giving Dante a look that suggested how little he'd missed some parts of this place.
"She failed. She failed, and she decided to lie to you and the people of Gask and say she'd brought him forth. We disagreed on the wisdom of such a plan."
"How were you there to disagree with her in the first place, Callimandicus?"
Hart said, looking down on Callie with all the height of the keep's front stairs and his own 7-foot frame.
"We thought you'd been dead for 15 years.
"A very good question," Callie said, tapping his chin.
He thought for a moment, then laughed and gave them a bony-shouldered shrug.
"No more lies. We've had too many already. Why don't we try the truth for once?"
"Which is?"
Ollivander said.
"I killed Jackson when he was down in Malin. Couple months ago now. Isn't hard to duplicate a man's appearance if you know what you're doing. You probably won't believe this, but I meant no more harm than to be a voice of moderation on the council. I was of the mind Samarand's warmongering would set us back another 100 years.
He glanced between the remaining members of the council. I know I'm not the only one.
That's a convenient enough story, considering you ended up killing her, Hart said.
Kelly shrugged.
Well, it happens to be true.
Things disintegrated at a regrettable pace when I revealed myself and questioned her intent to deceive you.
Ollivander stared hard at the old man. So you say.
It's true, Dante said to bolster Callie's lie. Blaze and I were there at the foot of the white tree. Some of the council agreed with Callie, others with Samarand. When they attacked him, everyone else was killed.
Laramore's boy, Ollivander said, cocking his head at Dante.
So why didn't you kill the old man when it started? Surely Laramore went to our aid. He also once told me this man had led the council. I hesitated. It all happened so fast. Most of them were dead before I knew what was going on.
Say I take this at face value, Ollivander said, shifting his gaze to Callie. It sounds enough like her. You've had a few days to think about what the rest of us should do.
That is a delicate subject, Callie said.
I was next in line.
Callie's face grew guarded.
It was never Samarand's to take.
I thought you weren't here to take back your old chair, Ollivander said.
His hands drifted toward his belt.
You were here when she stole it from me, weren't you? Watching your lessons in that little chapel while she and the others conspired?
I've been defending this city for 30 years, Ollivander said, dropping down a step. I've been on this council for 14. Where have you been all that time? Hiding in a cave 1,000 miles away? It seems to me it was the will of the council that you should step down, not an act of treason.
Kelly thrust out his chin and paced forward, and Dante felt the nether shrouding the old man's form. He clamped his lips between his teeth, ready to bite until he bled. If there was to be one more battle, he'd hit hard as he could. He'd leave it all in rubble.
I was driven out by treachery, Callie said in a voice that wasn't yet a shout. She turned them all against me, bent the laws to her advantage. The passage of time doesn't make it any less a betrayal.
Things kept going while you were gone, old man. This isn't the same order you left behind.
I'm here now.
So am I, Ollivander said. He wrapped his fingers around the hilt of his sword.
Stop,
Tarkon said, putting himself between Callie and Ollivander.
You weren't yet in a position to see how it happened, Ollivander.
All you know about why Callie left is what Samarand told you.
Well, now she's dead. So are 5 of our brothers. You want to see the rest of us killed over a dispute that was never right in the first place? You want to take your vengeance till there's none of us left at all? Then time can finish turning our city into ruin.
You're on his side, Ollivander said, flinging a hand at Callie.
I'm on the side of our order, Tarkon said. All of us are. I won't see any more of our blood spilled.
Ollivander glanced between Callie and Tarkon, and the 3 other living priests. No one spoke.
Perhaps, Hart said, breaking the long silence. The full council should be given a say in who's to replace the fallen.
Callie opened his mouth, then clicked his teeth together and nodded.
Dante wished Laramore were here. He could hardly grasp the layers of politics flying between these old men.
I'd ask it anyway, Callie said. I've been away too long to know who's worthy to appoint.
Ollivander met eyes with Hart. He dropped his hand from his sword.
It's been a long time since the laws of the Citadel were amended. Perhaps we should learn from Samarand's death. Perhaps it's a dangerous thing to collect too much power in the hands of a single man.
I thought so, even when I had it,
Cali said.
We could shift more responsibilities to the council, Tarkin said. He smiled wryly at the few who remained. If it's time to make changes, the time won't get any righter than this.
We'll have open discussions on the council's new structure, Ollivander stated, more than asked.
It will all be open, Cali said.
Ollivander looked for a moment like he were trying to swallow a stone the size of his fist. At last he nodded.
Then let it be remembered I laid down my claim in the name of rebuilding.
Relief washed the faces of the council. Again, it had all gone too fast for Dante to fully follow. He felt the nether the priests had held ready soak back into the substance from where it had come. They turned to smaller details. The horses of the troop were led away to stables, the armsmen dispersed to meals and barracks. Rettinger made orders for the storage of the corpses until they could be properly buried. Cali and the boys followed the council priests out of the cold and into the keep.
Well done out there, Cali told Dante, once they'd freed themselves from the others.
Blaze, sensing he wanted a moment alone with the old man, had run off in search of real food. Cali smoothed his long, stringy hair back from his brow.
That could have turned ugly.
Shut up, Dante said. You're naming me to the council. Cali scratched one of his brambly eyebrows.
Why am I doing that?
Because I'll kill you in your sleep if you don't. Ollivander will back me.
Not if I kill you in your sleep first,
Cali chuckled. His face froze when he met Dante's eyes. You're not joking.
Not at all.
Then what if I do get to you first?
Old men take 5 naps a day, Dante said. A tendril of nether curled around his finger.
They're not going to like it, Cali muttered.
He grinned then, as if acknowledging the weakness of that argument.
But what would be the fun in ruling if you never make men do things they don't want to?
Dante tightened his jaw.
I'm glad you're so reasonable.
Don't take that tone. I don't need to be threatened to do what's right.
I'm not a recalcitrant child.
Cali tugged on the end of his beard.
You've earned your seat. All you had to do was ask.
Dante said nothing, just stared at the old man who'd once given him safety in the maelstrom of the world. At one time, Cali had looked to him like a font of wisdom. Dante had thought the old man could teach him not just to wield the nether, but how to live easily, to use his knowledge to rise above the petty concerns and emotions that threatened to drive him mad. Cali taught him how to use his blood to fuel the shadows. But the only thing he'd taught Dante's heart was a hopeless bitterness he feared he could never escape.
Do better with your rule than you did with me, Dante said.
He turned and left the old man alone in his chambers, the room that had once been Samaran's. Blaze was waiting for him in the hall.
All finished, he said.
Yeah.
Let's go get drunk, Blaze said.
He clapped Dante on the shoulder and led the way down the stairs. At last, Dante saw its appeal. At first the council resisted, citing Dante's youth and his newness to their order, but Cali held fast, and in the end Dante was named to their ranks, by far the youngest to have ever held a seat. They promoted 2 monks of long standing, and left the other 3 seats vacant for the time being, reasoning it was better to wait until they had worthy candidates than to fill them in haste and risk erring. After 2 days of discussion, the council agreed now was not the time to open war with Malin, and Cali sent riders for points across the south. Their agents were to be recalled, asylum granted to any Malish rebels who may have lost their homes and families in the struggle. The orders with the Smiths were cancelled. It was a time to rebuild, the council declared, to restore their strength and study what may have gone wrong with the rites to free the vaulted god. For the time being, the business of the Southlands was beyond their scope. The funerals were to be held the day after that decision. Dante ran down the keep stairs the minute the council concluded and galloped through the town to the stoneworker they hired for their markers. He paid the craftsman 3 times the worth of the work and told him to put all his others on hold.
"But we don't even have a queen right now," the stoneworker said when Dante explained his order.
"That's what makes it so impressive," Dante said. It was delivered to the citadel the next morning, in time to join the wains headed for the hill overlooking the bay. The stone was simple, but then so had been Larimore's looks. The procession of council and monks and an honor guard of soldiers walked quietly from the citadel to the top of the hill, where the order kept its vaults. The bodies were laid at rest in the walls of the current sepulchre. Those who still lived stood on the hill, gazing at the grey, white-capped waters of the bay to their north and west, the city spread out behind them, buried in white. The same snows covered the ruins of the outer housing, the age-spotted buildings past the first wall, the well-kept temples and manors and business houses inside the second. The same white snows draped the black spires of the Cathedral of Ivars, lay on the grey stone walls of the citadel, the roof of the keep. Now and then, a single shout from down in the city caught a freak gust and reached their ears atop the hill, but mostly they stood in a soft breeze that blew unabated over the shin-deep snows.
"These bodies, they're just things," Callie said, once he'd readied himself to address the few score men and women who gathered outside the simple columns and cuts of the vault.
He had actually combed his beard for the occasion, had switched his torn clothes for the elegant wear of his station. He looked old, but ageless, thin, but potent, as if he weren't a man, but a marble statue of himself. He moved his blue eyes over the waiting crowd.
"The people they were, the people we knew, they're not what's turning into dirt in that tomb behind his."
He narrowed his eyes until the folds of his skin threatened to squeeze out his sight entirely.
"No," he said. "We're here for a while, in these fleshy shells, and all the while we ask why. What's this pain I feel? Why do I feel so cut off from the men around me, from the skies above? I don't think any of us ever receives the answers to those questions. Have any of you?"
He raised his eyebrows at the men. A few of them cleared their throats and murmured soft negatives that could be mistaken for coughs.
"Neither have I, and I've lived a very long time."
He looked out on all that snow, the silent violence of the cold-torn sea, the banks of clouds that hung over the land from one horizon to another. It was threatening to snow again.
"The people that wore those fading cases in there no longer have to face those questions. They found their answers. Don't let's feel sorry for the dead. Perhaps they've moved on to paradise at the right arm of Aron. Perhaps they howl into the oblivion of the starless void. Hard to say. Hard to know. One thing of which we may be certain is they're no longer alone. In some form, they're reunited with Aron and all those he's culled from this earth through all the long ages. I imagine that's an awful lot of people. As many as the flakes of snow that look like one big sheet from our position way up here. It stretches as far as we can see. Who knows how much further it goes beyond our sight?"
He paused, frowned at himself. Wind blew strings of his grey hair into his eyes. He brushed them away, then rubbed his hands together against the cold. Someone coughed.
"We all want to be back there," he said, nodding at the cloud-covered skies. "Well, now a few more of us are. The rest of us aren't yet ready. We must still live this earth."
"Live this earth," the man sighed. The priest spoke long, generous words about Samarand, about Baxter and Piotr, and the other dead members of the council Dante couldn't remember. He wondered if he should feel something for his part in putting them in their vault, for causing the grief that lined the faces of the men on the hill. Did it mean anything that every man who died had those who wept for his passing? How many had mourned for all the soldiers and trackers and hired blades he'd killed along the way? He found he didn't care, and not just because they'd all been trying to kill him as well. The gods didn't oversee justice in this lowly place, or if they did, it was a godly brand no human could understand. No one could be surprised when the living became departed, no matter how young they may be, no matter how abruptly it had caught them. He heard words about Samaran's iron will but fair heart, about some old man's thoughtful wisdom, about a less older man's noble spirit. They droned on for a long time. When the last man wrapped it up, they looked to Kali, who stepped forward and cleared his throat. "Since no one else has," Dante said before the old man could conclude things, "I'd like to speak a few words about Larimore." Kali quirked his brow, then gave him a nod. Dante wandered from the safety of the crowd to where those who'd spoken had faced the mourners, alone. His heart railed against his ribs. How could he find any words that weren't hollow? How did a eulogy become anything more than simple-minded words meant to comfort those who went on? "Larimore was a good man," he started. His voice sounded thin, false. The eyes of all the men who watched him were already glazed.
His cheeks burned.
He thrust out his chin and looked past them all, past the condolences and aphorisms he'd heard repeated here and at half a dozen other funerals, stared through the poet's words for dead lords and ladies and all the singers' sad songs until all that was left was a burn beneath his sternum and a cold anger behind his eyes. And then he was speaking before he had a chance to weigh his words inside his head. "I think he'd laugh at us here," he said, glaring over the heads of the crowd. "Make sport of our sober words and somber faces. He was fearless in that way, unstained by the harsh opinions of others. Yet he treated every man as his equal, even when they were just a boy. Perhaps if we had more like him, the judgments we pass would be more aligned with the stars where he now rests." Dante stared at the snow at his feet, searching for more words, but realized that was enough. "Goodbye, Larimore." A few of the men uttered agreements. Kali said a few standard words of closure, and then the men dispersed from the mass to smaller groups, talking and laughing in quiet, gentle voices.
"He'd have liked that," Blaze said, coming up to Dante's side.
"He'd have made fun of me for it." Dante walked to the wagon that carried Larimore's stone, and spoke for a while with the men who'd borne it. They found a clear patch beside the sepulchre where his body lay, with the others, and hacked at the hard ground with spades until they could lower in the marker's broad base. They firmed it in place with the overturned dirt, stamping the soil flat. By the time they'd finished, most of the mourners had started back down the hill toward the citadel. Kali stood beside Dante and gazed down with him at the gravestone.
"That's disrespectful," he said softly. "The jaws of a dragon?"
Dante smiled tightly. "Only if you didn't know him." "I suppose I'll trust your judgment." Snowflakes began to coast down through the sky. Blaze pulled his cloak tighter around his body.
He put his hand on Dante's shoulder. He smiled at the marker. Then they too turned and started back toward their home, leaving the dead to theirs.